With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson. And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to patrons, including our very latest, Neil Fisher, supporting us directly. And thank you, Neil. You're keeping the lights on for another month. And just for the price of a couple of coffees, you can join brilliant people just like Neil and get access to our full-length show, our ad-free edition. You can listen and chat with us as we record live, get our exclusive extra show, extra message, in fact. Find out more, patreon.com/UK Tech. Now, joining me this week, while Ian is out rambling, sitting in beer gardens, basically getting paid to do absolutely no work whatsoever, it's the other half of the Langson brothers. It's Andy from CNET. Salutations, you spooky midnight creeper. How are you?
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, of course. It's been some time since I deigned to grace this podcast with my dulcet tones.
Well, I do remember asking you on the show a few weeks ago, but you had some pathetic excuse.
About moving house.
It was something to do
that day I was actually moving house, and you were not forthcoming with sympathy for my situation. You seem to take it as of course a personal slight that I chose moving into my new home over recording your podcast.
Yes, I just assumed that if you had time to use the bathroom and cook lunch.
I didn't do any of those things.
Anyway, it is largely great to have you back on the show, and thank you for being here. It's been a little bit of a slow news month as far as UK tech news goes, and everything big and global is not necessarily what we deign to talk about every week. So instead, we've got a couple of items to beat around the proverbial bush, as it were, and one of them actually has stemmed from Andy's recent move to a new house in Scotland, because Andy was struggling to get a decent internet connection. For how many weeks was it? Did you have to wait?
It was delayed by 7 weeks in total, which for an online journalist, photographer and video producer is hell.
It would be bad enough even if you were unemployed. But Andy has moved to hyperoptic, so like fiber to the premises installation of broadband. And the reason I was particularly interested about him doing that, as opposed to going with, say, Virgin, which I believe you were on prior to...
I was on BT. I have been on Virgin.
Oh, BT.
When I was in London. I was in BT when I was in the other part of Edinburgh.
Ah, okay. The reason is that one of hyperoptic's competitors, GigaClear, recently finished digging up all the roads around our house here in London and installing its fiber to the premises. And initially I thought, well, how on earth are they going to compete with the likes of Virgin Media, which is giving me gigabit speeds and what I felt was a reasonable cost. It's still very expensive, but it's gigabit unlimited broadband. And it turns out the way they're going to compete is by wildly undercutting Virgin. To put this into context, if I wanted to get let's say 600 meg down and 600 meg up on this fiber to the premises connection will cost me £30 a month. At the moment, I pay Virgin more than double that, and I don't even get anywhere close to that level of upload speed. It's like 60 or 70 meg. Yeah. I get a gig down, but most devices are wireless and never hit a gig. Most of them can't achieve more than about 600 megabits. So it's really made me think, is it at the point now where there is enough competition to the likes of Virgin Media to get these fiber connections? And you moving to hyperoptic instead of going with Virgin in up in Scotland made me think, actually, I might be onto something in terms of actually thinking about switching. So I thought I would get you to describe your experience thus far.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of you thinking about it, I think you and I are on very much the same page about our demands from the internet because of what we do. We both produce a lot of media. We both do. We're very like heavy internet users. We need constant, stable, fast connections. And I think it's important to consider whether that is what you actually need, because there is choice now. It isn't just a case of you get whatever you can afford, and or you get, you know, just have one internet connection that's handed to you. You know, you can go to a lot of different companies for a lot of different packages. I could have had Virgin Media installed on day one. The previous occupier of this house did have Virgin Media. We could have got a fiber line installed immediately, and it would have been fine. We wouldn't have had these problems over the last 7 weeks. But it was really a case of thinking long-term. We're like, well, okay, we're going to have these delays. We knew we were going to have at least a month delay. That was not Hyperoptic's fault. That was Edinburgh Council, who were being difficult about the roadworks in order to literally install that fiber optic line into the house. It needed to dig up some of the pavement, some of the road. And as a result, they were like, no, you can't do this. We need at least a month's notice for like the proper paperwork to go through, blah, 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 usual red tape council nonsense. Fine, I get that. But it was a case of thinking long term about I produce a lot of video, I upload in 4K, maybe even in high resolution, I upload a lot of images. It was really a case of being in this for a long haul. This is a place where I've bought, not rented. It made a lot of sense. So it was really a case of figuring out what I needed and what was gonna keep me going long term. So that's important. Step one for everyone to really consider when they're choosing that connection, thinking about what they actually really need. That wasn't really your question, was it?
Well, my question was what your experience has been thus far, and that's the experience of the installation and the reason, what you had to go through in order to move away from the what would have been the obvious choice for many people.
That was why we chose it. Hyperoptic was a no-brainer in that sense. They offer up to a gigabit up, and that is exactly what I needed. And it did come with some issues. As I say, the council were difficult. The first 4 weeks was on them. After that, there were various errors that Hyperoptic made. One time we were booked in for something to be done and just nobody showed up. Then once the hardware had been installed in the house, the router was all set up. It was putting out a Wi-Fi signal, and the guy says to me, "Oh, so yeah, it turns out it hasn't been connected at the other end. So, yeah, don't know what that should have already been done." I'm like, "Yeah, no kidding." And this was a Friday about 1 p.m. and I got through to the customer service team, and they were like, "Yeah, okay, we're going to try and get this sorted." I said, "You have to have this sorted today. I cannot have another weekend without this. I've got a lot of projects on. You need to make this right." They couldn't. It was still Tuesday before it was done, which was very, very disappointing. But fine, you know, these things happen. I get it. You know, mistakes can be made. I put this out on Twitter before I actually went to Hyperoptic, and I had a lot of very, very positive responses from people who are Hyperoptic customers, who would recommend it, who would continue to be Hyperoptic customers. The customer team that I was dealing with were consistently very helpful throughout, even if their response was, "Oh, I'm sorry, this isn't going to be done today. It will be done on this day." Fine, at least they're transparent. At least they are, you know, it's not like I'm trying to call and I'm on hold for 45 minutes and then I get no answers. They were at least transparent in the process and how that happened. And also, in their defense, they gave me 6 months of free service as an apology for all of the bollocks that I've had to go through.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh yeah, they were great. And that did a long way. I mean, I will caveat all of this with saying that they knew I'm a journalist. So that which is the other thing. It's kind of like being a restaurant reviewer, and you go in and they know who you are. I don't know. I cannot say for sure whether my experience is exactly the case that other people would get. But as I say, lots of people who I know who are not journalists on Twitter were very, very complimentary about the customer service, about the support they've had. So I think it probably is roughly in line. But
yeah, and my position is ever so slightly different in that I'm tied into an existing contract with Virgin. And, you know, to put everything on the table, I think I'm paying £62 a month for my gigabit connection. But that's only gigabit down. And it's about 60 or 70 meg up, which is decent as far as the country average goes.
Yeah.
But for example, if I'm producing video at home that's destined for Bloomberg and I'm shooting it in 4K and I'm uploading it into the cloud, like we're talking gigabytes and gigabytes that ideally are time need to be uploaded immediately because they're time sensitive and it's news. Yeah. And so that upstream makes a huge difference. And but if I were to leave Virgin Media, I have to pay a fee, and they said it'll be about £250 to leave my contract early, because it would be a year early. However, I did some sums and added up the cost of the next 12 months of staying with Virgin and not paying that fee, and the next 12 months of going to GigaClear at their much lower rate of less than half what Virgin's charging, even factoring in that early termination fee, over the 12 months, I would still save just over £100. And in doing that, I would actually get basically the same wireless experience down, but I would be uploading it 600 meg instead of 60 odd. So to me, it feels worth doing. It's just that whole having to dig up your driveway to install that last little bit of cabling.
Yeah. I think it's important to be clear, just to cut you off there, when you were talking about prices. GigaClear has the same thing that HyperOptic does, in that £34 a month, which is also the same as what I'm paying, is for the first 18 months of your contract, after which it is, I'm looking at GigaClear now, it's £64 a month. So it's basically what you're getting is a much lower introductory contract for 18 months. It's huge. It's not like it's 3 months and then it's £64. It's still a very long amount of time, but eventually it will become the same price that you are essentially paying for Virgin now. So
yeah, but then there'll undoubtedly be different offers down the line, and then I can switch to somebody else potentially. Who knows?
Exactly. Yeah.
But overall, you know, obviously there's been a few little bits of red tape and problems you've had to deal with, but overall, has it been worth it for you?
100% worth it. Yeah, getting, you know, the problems out of the way, it was the right decision to wait and get the better service. It's like, you know, it's like buying a product, buying something. You buy cheap, buy twice is a rule that I follow with everything. I would rather wait, save up a little bit more money and get something that's really going to be suitable, which actually I think is something we're going to talk about with cameras soon. And in this case, it was we're gonna be struggling internet wise for the next few weeks, but it's a long-term proposition. When this is a house we've bought, we hope to be in here for at least 5 to 10 years, we're going to want to make sure that we've got a really good service going forwards. So it definitely was a smart move, and actually now it's in. So one of the things that I was planning on expecting to have to do is set up like a mesh network in this house. I've got a period property. It's 160 years old, big thick walls, and I thought, okay, well, you know, a one router is not going to cover this house, and actually we've got whole home coverage from one from their one router with almost no discernible drop of speeds. Even when you're a floor away from the router, which is amazing, actually. So,
who makes the router?
It's Nokia, actually.
Really? Well,
classic Nokia. Not even HMD. Nokia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Nokia still makes all the infrastructure stuff. Like that's kind of their core.
Yeah.
Making core networks, actually. I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. So I'm used to hearing, you know, oh, it's TP-Link or it's Linksys or somebody. Yeah. But Nokia, interesting.
Yeah, Nokia,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody else has had experience with either of these two companies we've mentioned, there are others. CityFibre, I know, is popular for the people that have it. I'd certainly welcome your your feedback, your suggestions or ideas, you know where to send them to. But if you don't, it is uktechshow@icloud.com. It's time to talk about something that I think Andy lends a particular expertise to.
Yeah.
Andy?
Yeah, I heard it. I was just letting it slide.
Ah.
And actually, that was almost another photography pun.
Was it?
Slide.
What, do you regularly take photos at fairgrounds?
Slides, Nate. Slide, like slide for photography.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right. Well, neither of those two were particularly good, but that's okay because the following discussion might be. I wanted to talk a bit about the market for cameras. Andy, being a professional photographer and someone who's talked at length about SLRs and the benefits thereof over point and shoots and over mobile phone photography and so forth, it was a good opportunity to see how things have changed. Maybe just over the last year or so, we've had many more products coming out with 2, 3, 4 in some cases, and 8 in a rare number of cases, lenses on the back of smartphones. We're seeing Apple deploying cameras that shoot in Dolby Vision, HDR, 4K. We're expecting ProRes video encoding support on the next iPhone. We're seeing the Pixel 6, which I think has got a particularly impressive camera array, as we're expecting. Obviously, Samsung's been doing some very interesting things with 8K and massive zoom lenses on its recent Galaxy products, and Andy's been complimentary of many of those as well. But at the same time, we're seeing interesting developments in the SLR market and the higher end of the SLR market too, as a way of differentiating or rather providing a clearer reason for somebody to buy a dedicated camera versus one of the popular smartphones that has a very good camera for a lot of people. So with that in mind, and as somebody who is considering purchases at the moment, you, that is Andy, I am not. I'm still very happy with my Sony a7R2. I thought we could check in and see what's exciting you in the world of photography and if there's any massive change in terms of the viability of professionals just continuing to use a smartphone.
The answer is it's all exciting, to be honest. I really kind of feel like we're still in this new golden age of photography that's been driven by phones. I've got the iPhone 12 Pro Max. And the images you can take on this thing are incredible. Like, genuinely, you would not know that these were taken from a phone when you can shoot in Pro Raw. The things you can do with those photos in terms of spending the time in processing them in Lightroom, using the same professional editing tools I use in all my photography. They're amazing. I'm super excited about ProRes in video, and it's actually video that I think has been for me the thing that I've been debating most recently, and that I've been trying that I've actually found to be very confusing when I'm trying to upgrade my equipment, because I am trying to upgrade at the moment. My professional stuff, for the most part, as you know, I shoot on a Canon 5D4, which is Canon's top end. Or pretty much top end professional DSLR, which is fine and it's been great until I made the mistake of borrowing from Canon when it launched an EOS R5, and I hadn't used one of their mirrorless cameras before, but it when I sent that back and I picked my 5D up again, I realized what a dinosaur it is. This is like a relic of a bygone era of photography.
It's for those people just who aren't necessarily familiar with the difference, can you just summarize the difference between the fundamentals of those two SLR and the mirrorless?
I mean, on a very top end level, the things that you will actually notice is size and weight, and they have a different lens mount. They take photos in a different way, in terms of mirrorless cameras, as the name suggests, do not have mirrors that flip up and down to help take a photo, but this is a little bit too deep for most people. They still just have a standard image sensor inside and they take photos exactly the same way. You still use, you know, your aperture and your shutter speed and your ISO speed in exactly the same way. But mirrorless cameras are smaller, they're lighter, and that is the big thing that I noticed when I went back to my 5D and I realized every time I go shooting landscapes, I'm carting a huge amount of size and weight in a backpack, instead of this one small, light, nimble camera. And it really stood out to me as things have moved on. Things have changed. I wouldn't recommend people now, if they are starting out in their photography journey, but are really keen to get into it long-term, go mirrorless. Buying these DSLRs, even though you can start, you know, you can get them cheap, it is buying an outdated system, which not too long from now is going to be fairly obsolete.
So, but let's think about it, because the iPhone 12 or the latest Galaxy, you know, they are technically mirrorless cameras as well. You know, they are taking pictures in a similar way, in that there's a sensor behind the lens. There's no moving part other than, you know, things like optical image stabilization or something for the broad mass of people. That is a small, compact, very good mirrorless camera. So essentially, if they've got rid of the DSLR and you're moving to a bigger camera that's just smaller than maybe it used to be, is that still enough of a reason to consider that? Or,
over a phone, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
As someone who's just praised the quality of pictures, the fact you can edit in these professional formats, and now with ProRes coming out, which for video people, it basically means there's no loss of quality between what you're shooting and what you're then passing to be edited in software, as opposed to at the moment where it's compressed, some quality's lost before you even start editing.
Okay. I mean, there is still a difference. That gap has never been more narrow, but there is still a reason for certainly enthusiastic amateurs and pros to go with a dedicated camera. There is a difference in quality on like a fine level. So if you are printing big, or you know that you may need to crop into your image quite a way, which is often the case in landscapes and things, if you want to sort of reframe a shot, you have that ability to do that. There is a difference in like fine details and image noise, and phone cameras rely very heavily on their results with software. Like, the big thing that's changed in phone cameras over regular DSLRs is the software that's driving them. It's why Apple does so well, because it makes the hardware, it makes the software, and it knows how to make camera software where your photos, like the auto HDR, is beautiful. It can really help control highlights, bring up those shadows. Computational photography is a huge differentiator on mobile phones. But if you are a pro, you do big prints, you want to really have like the best possible image quality, then you're going to need to go to a camera. And that's before we get onto swapping lenses. Not all of the lenses on the back of phones are as good quality. I love shooting with on the Galaxy S21 Ultra, they have a 10 times optical zoom lens. And it's amazing. And it is great if for something light in your pocket, you're basically taking a full kit bag of gear just in a phone, but it is not as good as a DSLR with a 200mm telephoto lens on it.
And it feels to me then like the difference here is less about the physicality of the individual products, and it boils more down to that a phone is, you're relying on taking something maybe as best you can at the point of capture, whereas the professional cameras are allowing you much, much more flexibility in post-production and in reframing and almost reshooting in a sense, without that loss of quality, which is something that a pro is going to notice much more, or benefit much more from having, versus you're taking photos of kids at a, you know, your kids at the beach, or mm-hmm. Or your daily snaps.
Yeah.
Which is basically what the case has been over the last few years. Like, in that sense, it doesn't seem like much has changed, even though we're in these multi-lens camera ecosystems now.
Yeah, and that is one of the differences. Certainly using like wide apertures on, you know, if you get a beautiful like 50mm prime lens f1.2 aperture on a DSLR, like the results of that shot, the results of that like background bokeh is going to be wildly different to what you would see from a phone. When you look at those fine details, it is wildly different. When I do product photography, I have done some examples of taking like great product photography with a phone, and the sort of things that maybe if you were trying to do an Etsy store on the cheap, it's like, okay, great. I can, here are some tips. I can use my phone by utilizing lighting and staging well. I can get professional looking photos using just my phone. But for me, when I do more commercial level product stuff, it's always on DSLR. I don't publish any product work or professional work in that sense from my phone.
On the other hand, though, just to cut in, because I mean, both of us on the professional side of things, I know that you've done magazine features for CNET where in print you've used a phone.
Yeah.
And I also, on the video side, I do more video than I do photography. And on the video side, I have had stuff that's gone out on Bloomberg Television that I shot on a phone of myself. So it's not that it's a roadblock at all. It's acceptable. And people who are viewing those kinds of works aren't put off by the fact that the quality maybe is a little lower or has a different aesthetic to it. It's not a problem. It doesn't stop what you're doing from happening.
No, and nor should it stop you from doing it. You know, you can go out and you can have an amazing day taking photos, enjoying the process of finding a beautiful scene, waiting for great light, hunting for those amazing conditions and finding those shots that really stand out to you. And then you can take those with your phone and you can come back with some beautiful photos. And certainly if you do shoot in RAW, which I think every phone supports now, Apple Pro RAW or just standard DNG RAW on most Android phones, then you can spend the time in crafting an image in much the same way that you would from your professional camera. I think it's just when you want to take it to that next level, you want to get even better quality, you want to have even more control, which on a pro level and a very enthusiastic amateur, I think is kind of where you would want to go to. There are shots that I still probably I wouldn't want to get with my phone, but I have also put many shots out that are taken on my phone and you would have absolutely zero idea.
Mm. A couple of things that have come up in the live chat while we've been talking. Ian B, not to be confused with Ian M, the vagrant who's not hosting the show with me this week because he's too busy having fun on holiday, says, when my wife does her triathlons, I do like a long lens to see where she is, although in current conditions, I'm not sure when she'll do another triathlon. I hope that gets better for her soon. But that ties into a point that John raised as well, which is, Pat, Andy, do you use moment lenses on the phone? Now, I know you used to.
I used to a lot more, but less so now that there are more lens options on the iPhone. I used to use like either the wide-angle lens or their like add-on telephoto lens, which is they're effectively like using a magnifying, just putting a magnifying glass in front of your phone. But obviously now we have phones with multi-lens cameras. It's less important to use that. I do sometimes I will use a moment lens for a circular polarizer because that can help cut reflections, particularly on like water and cars. And there is no other way of getting around that without using a circular polarizer.
What is a circular polarizer?
As I say, it's a lens that cuts reflections. So if you are where I'll often use it, if I'm taking a photo of, say, a nice let's say a rock pool at the seaside, and you can see with your eye into that rock pool that there are like lovely starfish and anemones and nice colourful rocks and pebbles and stuff. When you're taking your photo, what you're getting is the glare of light on the surface of the water. So actually, you can't really see into the water. What you're seeing is just that reflection of light, a circular polarizer. As you turn it, you will literally see that reflection disappear. And instead, what you see is fully into that water. It cuts out reflections, which is also why I use it a lot on car photography, because for the same reason, you get a lot of reflections coming into panels on the car or the windows, but by using that polarizer, cuts out those reflections, you get a really nice professional finish. But that is something that you can only achieve using a circular polarizer. So that is one of the occasions. I use them almost all the time with most of my photography with my DSLRs. They can also help like make the make a blue sky look more blue. It's nice. Ian B says, like a polarized filter, exactly like a polarized filter, but with a circular polarizer, you have the control about how much of that polarization you apply. So yeah, that's really helpful, but that isn't something that's on a phone, but that is kind of the occasion now where I will use moment lenses for my iPhone.
So to sum up, it seems that advancement over the last couple of years have been made both in phones and their flexibility, particularly in post-production, and at the point of shooting, but also in mirrorless cameras and in things like resolution and quality and video, to the extent that the separation and the difference between the two remains as far apart as it has been. It's just both have got better. And for most people, getting those pictures out of the phone is still going to be the best first choice. But if you want to move into more creative works, so you want to have more control over post-production, you are doing obviously commercial professional stuff, that's different, then a mirrorless is the way to go. But, and maybe never have a mirror-based DSLR been less important to consider as a purchase.
Yeah, I wouldn't really recommend going for that. Unless you are just trying to get out into it, you know, you're taking your first steps, then you can pick up more traditional DSLRs, I think, much cheaper now. And as a result, you can also probably get the lenses cheaper, because that's the other thing. If you're upgrading, you need to upgrade to a whole new lens system. And that is at the moment what's holding me back. I have a very big suite of lenses, Canon L-series glass. You know, some of them are over £2,000 per lens. And if I were to change to a new system, if I were to get an EOS R5, I'm going to have to also buy new lenses, because while you can get converters, you can see the performance is not necessarily as good. So it's a huge
expense. Why would Canon do that?
Because
why would they change the mount? I mean, I get that there's a size difference, but it's not that different.
It's not the size. It's the way that how close the lens goes to the sensor, because the sensor is now right at the front of the camera, because it doesn't have that. It doesn't have the mirror in front of it, so it's the way the optics are all positioned. So like physically they're just not going to fit, they're not going to work on it. Like they do sell a converter, and it's decent, but it will slightly change how well it works. So it's ideally you will use the mount designed for that camera, which is fine. But if I were to replace my camera and all my lenses, I'd probably be looking at spending $25,000 comfortably in one.
Wow. Yeah, that's a hell of a robot.
Minimum.
They should really have some kind of a trade-in system where they've got the same lens with a different mount, and you send the old one in, and then you pay a small fee to to get the new one, and then they can handle recycling or reselling the old lens.
Well, I mean, you can. You do that with MPB. You just sell your stuff to companies like, I mean, I've used MPB before, so and they're great. You know, you send your stuff in, they send a courier to pick it up, and then they examine it. You get a good price, and then that's it. It's all handled. It's very easy to do. The problem I've had in upgrading is, and I won't go into this for long, but man, there are so many different options, and it's really confusing. And I've got to the point where I had to sit down with a spreadsheet and a checklist of, here is what I really need from my camera. Here is what I want it to do. Here is what I need it to do. And I considered moving to Sony altogether. I thought, oh, if I'm going to change mounts, maybe I could just move to Sony. Yeah, do that, because
then I can borrow your lenses.
Yeah, but the problem is that I won't be. I'll still be using Canon glass, but I'll be using an adapter, a Metabones, in order to continue using my glass. And I'm thinking long term, that's not great. It just turns out, unfortunately, that as a pro, what I need, which is high resolution images, in-body image stabilization, 4K video, 120 frames per second video, those are the main things that I want, and a smaller sized body. That is a EOS R5, unfortunately. They do the R6, which is half the price, but that's only 20 megapixels, and that is nowhere near enough for what I need as a professional, particularly not with product photography. The more megapixels, the better. So you've got it's easier to post-process your shots. I don't know if you've used the five-stop image stabilization, Nate.
I have not, but then I haven't used an R5, and I don't have five-stop on my...
With the R5, with a 24-70 lens that also has stabilization, you get about 8 stops of stabilization. And I was able to take a 3-second long exposure image handheld, and it was pin sharp, and I was absolutely blown away. So that was my reason why I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm living in the past with my stuff now. I have to upgrade. This is different now. This isn't just like, oh, I like the novelty. This is going to completely change how I shoot. It's going to change how I shoot video. It's going to change everything that I do. So,
well, I think a little bit like a garden trimmer on a Saturday afternoon, we are getting into the weeds a little bit here. So if anyone has any more questions for Andy on this topic, you can follow him on Instagram or Battery HQ, on YouTube, Battery HQ.
YouTube, it's Andrew Langston Photography. And we're talking about photos. I'm going to shoehorn this in. I have a YouTube channel that I go behind the scenes on photo shoots. I give tips and tricks and tutorials and advice and stuff. It's not gear related. You can go elsewhere for that. But if you like my photos, you can subscribe to my channel and see how I take them. And I always welcome people there to jump in the comments. And, you know, if they've got questions about what I'm doing, what I'm using, throw it in the comments of my videos, and we can chat about it there as well.
Brilliant. And any other questions for Andy, if you're a patron, drop it in the Discord or send an email to uktechshow@icloud.com. I'll pass it along, of course. Very interesting stuff. Thanks, Andy. Well, text message, as always, keeps you informed this week less about the British tech landscape and more about things Andy and I think are interesting to discuss. But someone who does keep a closer finger on the pulse of global tech news is Tom Merritt, Daily Tech News Show in the US. Let's hear what's been happening in the wider world of technology over the last week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, ice cream made from real milk without any cows involved in the process. And it's good. I've been eating it all week. How tech has helped fans affect the content they love. Microsoft's retro feel when it comes to browser choice in Windows 11. Intel makes an ARM chip and TSMC is making an Intel chip. And why India and Nigeria might birth the next big tech superstars. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Well, thank you, Andy, once again for joining us. You've already plugged your things to a decent extent, but as a bit of a reminder, Andrew Langston Photography on YouTube and Battery HQ on Instagram.
Yep, accurate.
Marvellous. And if you enjoyed this episode, do consider backing us. This is to the listeners, by the way, Andy. I'm not directing this at you. Getting our full-length ad-free show, listen live, get extra message, and all the other stuff that we talk about and bang on about every week. People do enjoy it. There must be something we're doing right. You can find out more about what we may or may not be doing correct at patreon.com/UK Tech. And
correctly.
Thank you, everyone. But you're right. What we are doing correctly. You were right to correct me there. Thank you. Thank you. Right. Toodle pip.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.